Mini episode 154 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 154. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris here with you today. We have a tremendous segment for you. It's always a lot of fun on this program whenever we can get a chance to talk about really what has become over the last couple of decades the national sport in America, that being football. And we've relished our opportunities in the past, speaking with, for example, one of the great football writers of all time, Ray Dittinger, whether it be Steve Sable from NFL Films. It's always great to be able to find out the intricacies of, the biggest sport in America and all the different facets that surround it. Today we're going to be talking about the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It is essentially the New Year's celebration, if you will, for the football season, when you have the pro football inductions every year, when you have the Hall of Fame game. It's pretty much the equivalent collectively, that entire spectacle between the induction ceremony, the Hall of Fame game, and all of the events surrounding it. It basically January 1st of the sports year, if you will, because it's basically what gets everything going from there. You've got exhibition season in the NFL. College starts up a couple weeks afterwards, and it's very exciting to be able to get a chance to learn a little bit about this outstanding museum. I have been privileged to be able to go there on a couple of occasions in my life. Of course, based in the greater Cleveland area, I'm just off by Interstate 77 from it, as it were. So I can attest from having seen it previously what a wonderful institution it is, and it continues to grow and expand, and we'll be talking about that as well. The gentleman that we have with us here today is a very accomplished sports producer, somebody who has also spent a tremendous amount of time on the business side of sports. And as of a couple of years ago, through his company, Veris Communications, he became the president and CEO of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And it's a pleasure for us to be able to welcome to the show today George Veris. George, welcome to the FDH Lounge, sir. Privileged to have you on.
Oh, pleasure to be with you, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being with us. We've got a lot that we want to talk about with the upcoming festivities, and I think we'll circle around to that. But I'm very intrigued first to find out here how your background jibes with what the Hall of Fame was looking to do a couple of years ago. I understand that they set up that for-profit venture and organized in that way, and was it a matter of where that they were streamlining the job and bringing some things into it that a man of your background was qualified and appropriate for the position at that time?
No, they weren't streamlining. They were actually looking to expand. Was a very good concept. They had created this entity 6 years ago on the vision of Merlin Olsen and Nick Bonacani and Tom Mack. And the idea was to use the Hall of Famers to create programs and sponsorships that would let the Hall of Famers get out to the fans around the country, create revenue for the Hall of Famers and revenue for the Hall. And they got it off the ground. They were running it by committee. And what happened is that as it began to grow, they realized they needed somebody to really run it on a daily basis and also expand the growth of it. And so that's why they reached out to a number of people, and I was very lucky to be chosen to have the opportunity to build this franchise. You know, there are only 273 Hall of Famers out of 22,000 players who played football. And so this is like dealing with everybody won an Oscar, every Nobel Peace Prize winner. And when you think of it that way and you realize how special these gentlemen are, and they really all are in their own way, shape, or form, it's really it was a tremendously exciting opportunity to be able to come up with programs to fit their skills and show sponsors how these gentlemen can reach into the passion of the football community, and we've been very lucky so far in doing that.
That's a very interesting explanation. Yeah, I was able to glean as I was reading there. I knew that it had something to do with as they were reorganizing the position and not streamlining, but as you said, going in the other direction there, that your skills came into play. Interesting also that you mentioned Merlin Olsen, just because I can tell you from my last visit to the Hall of Fame with some friends, the one thing that made everybody's jaw drop in the group that I was there with was looking at his plaque that it referenced, I think it was like 15 consecutive Pro Bowl appearances or whatever it was. The Merlin
right.
Olsen plaque is always one of the first things I think of when I think of the Hall of Fame.
Well, just to correct you on one thing, we don't do plaques.
I'm sorry, the Hall of Fame.
It's the bust.
The bust. My bad on the terminology.
It's no problem. But actually, the career notes are not on the bust. You probably were referring to, they have a panel where you can look up all this information on the Hall of Famers. That's a really great display that's put together by the longtime executive director of the Hall, Joe Horrigan, who really puts together the museum so that you can go and today, very media friendly, click a button, see videos and see stats. But you're right, Merlin had an extraordinary career.
Yes, and that was something that as a football nerd myself, I knew that, but it was funny seeing my friends see that had maybe hadn't known that about him, and just seeing the looks on their faces as they kind of digested that kind of longevity. I'm curious also in terms of your skill set for that, because again, your background is so much associated with TV sports production and other forms of production as well outside of TV sports. But as they were redefining that job there, as they were looking to go in that direction, how were they intrigued to the best of your guess by your background in that way? What made them think that was a good fit for where they were going?
I don't know. You'd have to sort of ask them. I mean, I knew I think there were a couple of familiarity items. I knew many Hall of Famers from my work in television sports. I had actually produced Merlin Olsen at CBS, worked with Anthony Munoz at CBS in producing games, wrote for Frank Gifford when I first started out at ABC Sports. So my name was familiar to a number of Hall of Famers. I knew the people here. I knew Joe Horrigan here at the Hall. I produced the second All-Madden team for CBS here at the Hall of Fame. Joe and I were actually ball boys at the same time as kids, him for the Bills, me for the Jets. We always think that we met underneath the stadium exchanging oranges and ice buckets in Allentown, Pennsylvania, when the Jets used to play the Bills there. I then produced the documentary on NFL Films, which involved me with the Sables, who are in the Hall of Fame, premiered the film here at the Hall of Fame, and actually had grown up in Cleveland, went to high school at Shaker High, and had come back after many years in New York to work for the Browns. So I was in a geographic range. So I think they took into account those factors and said there's somebody we're comfortable with, somebody who knows how to produce Hall of Famers, somebody who's in the area. And for whatever other reasons, they decided to pick me.
Excellent. That's a great answer. I imagine that it had probably something to do with the relationships along the way and some of the experiences with people. And you just confirmed that. It's interesting you mentioned about the Sables. We had very much enjoyed when we had Steve Sable on the show previously. He said something at that time that I wonder about as it potentially applies to the Hall of Fame. He was talking about the future of NFL films, where it's going, and it's basically more or less a platform agnostic type of operation, that it's going to be increasingly set to NFL.com, eventually with mobile and other platforms like that. As you look into the future, past the 50th anniversary of the Hall of Fame next year, to where it's going long term, I imagine there's got to be some long term planning that goes on in these areas from time to time. How do you balance in your mind, to the extent that you can really think of it at this point, the fact that you're always going to be promoting a brick and mortar facility versus making it accessible to people on mobile devices, on the internet, and continuing to promote it as you're doing very well right
now?
Well,
that's not really true. Actually, brick and mortar is probably the least thing that the Hall of Fame is.
Oh, okay.
You have to realize something, Rick. The Hall of Fame houses the largest repository of Pro Football Fame history non-video in the world. 7 million documents, programs, artifacts, physical uniforms, all of which have stories behind them. And if you go to Pro Football Fame website, you'll see the incredible job, which has been expanding rapidly and attracting readers, the incredible job they've done in housing these documents, telling the stories, and letting the public access them, that Pete Fearley and his staff have done for 20 years. I mean, the people who work here at the Hall, this is a lifetime of love. And so they have, I mean, they're it's like walking around Winston Churchill's of football history. I mean, they know more, and they're dispensing more than anybody, anywhere, including the National Football League. I mean, they're the keepers of the history flame. And so that in itself is tremendous information to get out in all the mobile devices and the Twitters and the Facebooks, and we do that. So where this is a living and breathing information giving, disseminating organization, and then you have all the Hall of Famers going out and talking about their lives and their careers. You put those things together, there's a huge amount of living information that we're getting out there on a daily basis. I mean, Pete Fearley just did a tremendous article with Larry Fitzgerald, who, you know, not a Hall of Famer, but obviously has that potential. And you should read the article. Larry talked about how incredibly special it will be to play in the preseason game, which we have here with the Cardinals and the Saints. And by the way, tickets are still available to the public. As you mentioned in your early wrap opening, the game is on Sunday, August 5th at 7 o'clock at Fawcett Stadium. Kicks off the season, national TV and NFL Network. But if you read what Larry talked about, how excited he is to come to Canton, and he's not even in the Hall of Fame, then you understand that the logo of the Hall of Fame, what the Hall of Fame does in terms of making pro football history come alive, has such appeal to millions of fans.
Absolutely, and as I said, yeah, your website that you have right now is great. You're doing a tremendous job with it, but I do want to explore a little more, because as you said, that's counterintuitive from what I was thinking, what I would guess a lot of people would be thinking as far as the brick-and-mortar facility, because this is, after all, again, a business, and you've got people coming in, and it's easy to see how the monetization is there to keep it going with the actual facility. But long-term, how do you see these other things happening? You're doing a tremendous job, as we said, you know, with right now with the internet, with expansion into a mobile and everything. But how do you see that playing out over the long haul? We're always fascinated by process on this program here. So how do you see that happening in a way where you've really got to balance trying to get people there and as well as, like you said, continuing to do a great job of pushing out the history?
Just what I told you. I mean, we are – for instance, the Hometown Hall of Famer program, which I have with Allstate, is a great example of how we get it out there. This is a program where we have created a historic plaque honoring the hometowns of the Hall of Famers and how they helped shape the Hall of Famers. And the Hall of Famer goes back, if it's Bob Greasy, to Evansville, Indiana. It's Nick Bonacani to Springfield, Massachusetts. It's Randall McDaniel in Tempe, Arizona. And we go back to their community centers or high schools that had the most influence on their lives and present the school with the plaque. The Hall of Famer comes to the event and gives the plaque over to the school, but gives a speech to the students. Not really a speech, it's a talk about what it meant to grow up in that community and how they can be Hall of Famers, not just in football, but anywhere in their lives with the lessons learned. And that's 1,000 kids coming to these events. We did 50 of them. That's 50,000 kids far outside of Canton that will be coming to the Hall of Fame with their families. That's what we're doing. And whether it's with the Hall of Famer across the country live, whether it's the great program that Jerry Shockey runs, Heart of the Hall of Famer, which a Hall of Famer actually talks to classrooms electronically in a one-hour registered education session to seventh graders, that we reach 250,000 people, kids a year. We're out there. So it's good that you give me the chance to sort of correct the record, but you have to read it all. It's there at the website, and that's why we don't actually worry about attendance. They're going to come. What we worried about, which Steve Perry and the board of the Hall of Fame has done a tremendous job, was the building. It was an aging building, and they have done a magnificent job in raising $27 million and putting a brand new face in the building, year one, phase one, completed on time, on budget, a beautiful new front that really sticks out for the fans when they come in, makes them excited when they come in. Galleries have been updated, the brand new Lamar Hunt Super Bowl gallery. And the second phase will really address the new galleries. The rotunda will be created all brand new. We have a great NFL Films theater. So the Hall of Fame is poised to enter the next 50 years really ready to handle dramatic attendance growth and to continue to promote, educate the public across the country and hopefully the world in the history of pro football.
Absolutely, and I'm glad you got a chance to mention that about the spreading the seeds nationwide there with the kids and getting the Hall of Famers out there. It's easy to see when you talk about it that way, how that does tie into attendance in a very tangible way and bring people in. And you couldn't possibly know this, but I was very happy to hear one of the names you listed there, Bob Greasy, who, notwithstanding me growing up a Browns fan, he was just about my favorite player when I was a little kid. And I actually went to the Hall of Fame induction the year that he was there. So one of my favorite players of all time. So there are these names that really mean so much to so many people. And again, as you indicated, the way that they are being presented to the public there at the physical facility, you've got these upgrades that are going on. And as you said, the first version of it came in on time and on budget. I know that you're preparing pretty big for that for the next one for next year, and it's going to be the 50th anniversary. So, what are some thoughts looking ahead to next year? And we'll talk about this year. Don't worry, because I know that's right around the corner, and we do want to hit that. But as far as some of the things to mark the 50-year history of the Pro Football Hall of Fame,
we have a whole 50-year celebration, which actually starts this enshrinement weekend, the first weekend of August, when we unveil our new logo for 50 years. Joe Horgan, the executive director, just showed me today this incredible book that will be coming out, the 50-year history of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, that he and John Thorne have written. It's a magnificent tabletop book that will be available. That comes out starting July 31st. We have, in the second week of August, a national fan vote. Their fans get to vote for their all-time favorite Hall of Famer. It's the fan favorite team vote by position. They'll get to vote for 8 weeks. The results will be revealed in a national TV special on NFL Network on February 2nd, 4 p.m. We have a two-week window for the National Football League. The National Football League celebrating the 50 years of the Hall of Fame between December 2nd and 17th. You'll see Hall of Famers in their gold jackets speaking about the history of the game across all the different networks that broadcast NFL games. And we'll be honored by the commissioner with a round table. There'll be live on NFL Network with Hall of Famers talking about the history of the game. These are just some of the things that are going on throughout the whole year. We have a whole slew of activities at Super Bowl week. We have a traveling exhibit. How could I forget to mention that? That Joe has put together, Pro Football Through the Ages, that opens up at in Pittsburgh at one of the Heinz Museums. It lives in every city for 3 months. They've booked it for the next year. I believe it goes on to New Orleans after that. An amazing amount of outreaches, and I've just named probably four of them and forgotten five of them.
Even as a partial list, that's very impressive. And again, you would expect nothing less for an institution like this, for a 50th anniversary, for the magnitude of everything that encompasses. But as I promised, circling around, let's talk about, again, you had tied in some of these things with this year's festivities to the 50th anniversary. But what are some of the other ones? I understand that they're starting very shortly and leading all the way up to the game itself.
It's an incredible celebration of 10 days, starting with balloon rides and ribs burn off. And the Canton Chamber of Commerce has done an incredible job, 4,000 volunteers, a fashion show, a parade. I mean, to me, it's one of the 10 great events of Americana that we have, like things like around the Indianapolis 500 and Mardi Gras. If you've never had the chance to experience Enshrinement Weekend, and then Friday night we have the Gold Jacket. I don't think you get a ticket to it at the Gold Jacket ceremony at the Canton Civic Center, where the new class gets their jackets. They don't speak at the ceremony, but to hear them speak, you have to buy a ticket and come to their Enshrinement Night, which takes place at the stadium at 7 p.m., nationally televised. Some tickets are available. You can call the Hall of Fame here at 330-456-8207 to purchase tickets. The speeches are always memorable. No matter who the class is, they get their bus, emotion, crying, lifelong work with the ultimate achievement in the game most dearly beloved by America, nationally televised on ESPN and NFL Network. But there's nothing like coming here and seeing it in person. And, you know, this is part of the evolution of the hall. That ceremony, as you know, Rick, used to be held out at 2 in the afternoon in the front, the old front of the Hall of Fame, in a steamy,
yes,
hot summer. Now it's in the evening, primetime TV show, great set design by Frank Sapovitz of the National Football League, great TV production, great stage production. You know, you come to that and you walk away, feel like you're being at being part of history and being at history. So invite the listeners to go to profootballfame.com, click on Enshrinement Festival, and you'll see all the activities and availabilities.
Absolutely. The website is very comprehensive on that. And, of course, this year the Hall of Fame expanding to 273 members with cornerback Jack Butler, center Dermoni Dawson, defensive end slash linebacker Chris Dolman, defensive tackle Cortez Kennedy, running back Curtis Martin, and tackle Willie Rofe, swelling the ranks to 273. And yet, swelling, I guess, would be a relative term, because relative to other Hall of Fames, this is one that's very difficult to get into, even by Hall of Fame standards, when you've got guys like Art Monk on the outside looking in. That's one of the things that really, as you indicated previously, this is sort of the elite when you're looking at this level here, because it is such a great amount of difficulty getting voted in there. It really isn't just kind of handed out.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's a lot of work and a lot of years. And in the case of Jack Butler, who never thought he'd get in the Hall of Fame, to wait 45 years and get this honor is incredibly special. Curtis Martin, who grew up on the mean streets of Pittsburgh, a humble man, a workhorse, didn't play on a Super Bowl team, got into the Hall of Fame. I mean, the stories are just, it's for Willie Rofe, is voted by the Chiefs the most outstanding offensive tackle, which is something to say when you talk about other guys like Tom Tyer, who played on the Super Bowl team under Hank Stram and some of the great linemen that they had there, and then went out to New Orleans. And you're going to hear some great stories. I mean, I've been around these men. They came in January. in February, actually, I believe it was late February, to talk about Enshrinement Week with the staff here, because, you know, being part of Enshrinement Week is like conducting your wedding. Friends and family and who sits where and the activities, and it's a blur. It's probably one of the greatest weekends of your life, but you've got to be prepared for it, and they are, and they come, and they deliver a speech that will knock your socks off.
This has to make it, an extremely challenging time of year for your staff there. And as you said, obviously, they're up to it, and they pull it off year after year and make it happen. But as you indicated, the magnitude of it, with these guys bringing in friends and family, and I recall some years ago, I think it was Jim Kelly who brought one of the biggest groups with him ever, I seem to remember. That must really, really make it challenging. I'll bet everybody's kind of breathing a sigh of relief once this thing gets to mid-August, and, you know, hours can be a little bit closer to normal for everybody.
Well, it's part of, though, the great love. I mean, Tammy Owens and her staff are right here now. Dinner around a long table, making sure that the tickets are in the right hands and sorted. Joe Organ is next to me working on God knows how many different things. I mean, the whole staff is you know, late night, burning the light. But this is what they love to do. And, you know, look, I'm the rookie here. I've only been here 3 years. I do the least of any of them. And I watch in admiration, like I said, the 4,000 volunteers, Denny Sauter and Joanne Murray, the work that they have done in supporting this event for years. It's, you know, when I came to it 4 years ago, I had been to it before, but now to see the inner workings and the love and the passion that they have for this event and for the Hall of Famers, it really is very, very, very special. I would tell you that it's one of my all-time favorites. You know, I've done Olympics. I produced Yanni at the Taj Mahal. I have had great opportunities. Two Super Bowl pregame shows. This is right up there.
I can imagine, yeah. And, you know, you throw in other things, too, like a big, fat Greek wedding with helping to run the campaign for that thing there. So that really says a mouthful if you're putting the Hall of Fame festivities at that level. And, again, I myself am a lifelong a native of the region, and again, know what a great source of pride it is for all of Northeastern Ohio to see this thing come off every year the way that it does. Is there anything that we didn't cover about the Hall of Fame or this year's ceremony that we should, George? If so, please take it away.
You've done a great job, and I thank you for the time and the opportunity to talk to the listeners, and I hope that they take advantage of going to the website, coming in, Enshrinement, getting some tickets to the game. It's a very reasonable ticket. It's great for your kids. You know, we're very family-oriented. I mean, our attendance is always families. It's the grandfather, the grandmother, the father, the son, the grandchildren. They all are, you know, they've passed the football tradition down, and you can't really get a better sort of one-time family event that you're always going to be talking about for years than coming to Enshrinement Weekend.
Well, I, for one, can't wait to see what phase one of the renovations and expansion look like. I'm looking forward to my next visit there, George. And with this year-long ramp up to the 50th anniversary, with everything that you've got going on, we'd certainly love to have you back on the show to talk about that. Thank you so much for your time today, sir.
Appreciate it. Good luck to you, my friend.
Thank you very much, George. Great speaking with George Barris here today, President and CEO of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Thank you all for tuning in. FDH Lounge mini episode number 154.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.